Welcome to the Barrican Elmet Earthworks audio tour. We hope this recording will help add to your experience as we guide you around this remarkable historical site. You should now be standing at the Maypole. This has been in the heart of the village for centuries. If you head up the road, past the Methodist Chapel, up to the Green Gate, you will come across the first of the information boards. Take your time to read the information, then enter the Green Gate, followed by the Kissing Gate, into Hall Tower Field. Then restart this audio to hear more about the history surrounding the Barrack Earthworks. Please pause this recording now. You are probably now admiring the large hill that dominates this site. Although of importance itself, this does not form part of the Iron Age earthworks, and so I will come to it later in the tour. You are in fact now standing on a piece of land with historical significance that dates from over 2,000 years ago. Unfortunately, there is no surviving evidence of the community that once flourished here, other than the perimeter. Until just over 100 years ago, historians of the day believed that the entire site was in fact a Saxon palace dating from 600 AD, and that this grand structure must be the capital of the Kingdom of Elmet. We now know it to have been constructed sometime between 600 BC and the birth of Christ, during the Iron Age. We know virtually nothing of this time in our history, as no written records exist, but we do know that it was a time when these lands were made up of various tribes, with no system of rules or laws as we know them today. Whilst these various factions may have existed in relative harmony during times of plenty, the advent of famine would drive settlements to search out food from anywhere they could find it, often resulting in fierce battles. Because Barrack sits on land that is extremely fertile, neighbouring tribes would have eyed it enviously during these times of hardship. It may well be the reason why the inhabitants hereabouts built this hill fort. It would have served as a place of safety and as a place where harvests could be stored. Those who might attack could easily be fought off from its immense fortifications. Next, we will go to the top of the mound in front of you. Pause the commentary and restart it when you are at the top of the mound and have read the information board at the top. Stay looking initially over the notice board towards the church. This is facing towards the east. Pause now. The concrete base on the top was built sometime in 1939 or 1940, during the early stages of the Second World War, and is preserved as part of the scheduled ancient monument. It is all that remains of an observation post used by the Royal Observer Corps to look out for German planes approaching Leeds from the North Sea. Sixty years ago, the trees in front of you were significantly lower than they are today, and as a result, this position gave an excellent vantage point over the skies to the east. If you look immediately to the right of the church on a clear day, you can see the 900-foot chimney of Drax Power Station, about 14 miles away as the crow flies. While you are here, look carefully at the ground behind the board. You will see a metal pipe in which the telephone wire from the war is still in place. It was through this telephone cable that reports of enemy aircraft were communicated to the relevant headquarters. Take advantage while you are on top of the mound to look at the surroundings. You will have read from the information board that the mound was built some 800 years ago and is called a motte. The field in which it stands is probably the extent of the outer part of the castle, known as the bailey. Over to your left, the edge of the field is marked by a drop of about 10 feet to the bungalows beyond the fence, and is the best candidate for being the edge of the bailey in that direction. To your right and behind you, the bailey ends with a sharp drop into the Iron Age ditch. The board shows what the motte and bailey may have looked like at the time it was in use. The obvious protection offered by the ditch is the reason why the Normans built their castle in this spot. You will have read that the hill fort covers 16 acres. If you haven't the faintest idea how large 16 acres is, you can get a rough idea from here by tracing the outer edge of the Iron Age ditch. Start by looking to your right and following the line of trees beyond the fence. Follow the trees round to the right until they meet the houses. At this point, the Iron Age fortifications would have extended some 100 yards away from you to the house with the red-tiled roof. From that point, the fortification heads to the right for some 200 yards and can be traced by the trees that grow on its banks. Then follow the large trees coming back into the village. The point where the trees end marks the place where the Iron Age fortifications have been removed over the centuries to allow the village to be created. The ditch would have been more or less in a straight line from there to the Methodist chapel and the stone houses in front of the information board, eventually meeting the starting point. Why has this particular spot been chosen to establish a hill fort? The Vale of York lies to the east several miles beyond the church and the woodland which you can see. In Iron Age times, the land this side of the Vale of York was, and still is, good agricultural land. The Vale of York was itself marshy, poorly drained land and prone to flooding in wet seasons. Turn in the opposite direction and you can see the village of Scholes. Beyond that lies Leeds and then the Pennines. In the Iron Age, the land was on the whole boggy moorland or wooded and not good for farming. In fact, up to the late 1700s, a strip of moorland ended some 100 yards short of where you were standing. The land to the north and south was limestone, well-drained and fertile. Recent excavations carried out ahead of the M1 and A1 road schemes have revealed evidence of wide-scale farming on this land in Iron Age times. Those to the west and east trying to cope with poor land and smaller yields would have coveted the land. Note also, while you are here, that the land to the north drops away from the flat area covered by the earthworks. Later in the tour, you will see the extent of this drop. This defensive advantage must also have been a factor taken into account by the Normans when they selected this site for their Mottam Bailey. There are other earthworks in the area which are of interest. To the left of the information board, beyond the chapel, some mile away there is a defensive ditch called Becker Banks. It was probably a defence from attack from the south. Recent excavations for the motorway suggested that Becker Banks are younger than this hill fort and were built at about the time of the Roman invasion of this area. The banks seem to have no connection with the hill fort. Before we leave this mound, look to the opposite side of the field from the information board. You will see the fence has a short, sharp change in direction, number 3 on the map. If you have difficulty seeing it, it will be more obvious from ground level as you approach this part of the fence. Pause the commentary now and go via the steps to that part of the fence and switch on again. Look over the fence. You are now looking into the Iron Age defensive ditch. From here you see the steepness of the bank and the difficulty you would have in climbing it, especially if you were being bombarded with stones and other offensive objects. In all probability, there would have been a wooden palisade where you were standing, making the task of attacking your position even more difficult. Imagine if you tried to approach the top of the bank in a war chariot. It would not be easy to get down into the ditch from the field in the first place, let alone to scale the banking to enter the fort. This ditch was built in the days before iron shovels were available, and as far as we can gather, the earthworks were built using animal bones and wooden implements. The soil and rocks removed from the ditch were piled up to make the ramparts you are standing on. Try to imagine digging this earthwork. How much could you do in a day? How many people would be needed to build it? Bear in mind that you are looking at a small part of the whole fort. It would seem likely that either a large number of workers were involved or a smaller workforce labouring over a longer period of time. As the population of Britain at the time was small, possibly 1 million or so, it is likely that the earthworks as we see them today were developed over some considerable time. As the fortifications were made over 2,000 years ago and are close to the centre of the village, it's surprising that they still survive. There is, however, a section of the fort which has not survived the ravages of time. It extends from the stone houses at the entrance of the field, through the chapel, across the road, and some 50 yards beyond that before reappearing on a scale as impressive as the feature you are looking at present. Let's go now and pick up the ditch again at that point. It is marked 4 on the map and has an information board. Read the board and switch on again. Pause now. You are now standing on the outside of the ditch, giving you some idea of the challenges faced by an attacking force. Behind you, the land is flat and easy to cross. Therefore, the ditch and mound are particularly large. Note that the bottom of the ditch varies in depth. This is due to the fact that until 2006, the ditch was used by people living in the vicinity as a dumping ground for garden rubbish. We have had the ditch cleared, but because the land is a scheduled ancient monument, we cannot dig into the surface, and much of the dumping has composted into soil. Over the centuries, the fort has been invaded by nature, resulting in a number of ecological features of interest, as well as many potential hazards to the monument. One consequence of the dumping has been that Japanese knotweed has invaded the ditch, which has proved difficult to eradicate. In the early 18th century, the Leeds-born antiquarian Ralph Thoresby described his visit to these earthworks. He noted the earthworks had a carpet of blue from the profusion of flowers, which we know now as Aquilegia rustica. The large trees that you see before you provide a sanctuary for bird life, but destroy the bank when they fall. Unfortunately, the ownership of the ditch is in private hands and can only be visited as part of a pre-arranged tour. The tour now moves onto the northern embankment of the earthwork via public footpaths. Follow this path to the housing estate, and then at the end of the road, turn left and stop at the private entrance to Red Brick Cottage, which comes into view. This is location 5 on the map. Pause the commentary now and start it again at location 5. You are now at the northeastern extremity of the earthworks. To your left, you should see the ditch and bank heading back towards the last stopping place. Note the height of the bank at this point, and recall your attempt to imagine how much effort went into creating the fortifications. You will probably agree that any ideas you had then require revision upwards. At this point, the earthworks disappear. The earliest map we have, which was made about 1800 before the red brick house, known as Bank Cottage, was built, shows that at that time the gap had already been made in the defences. Now go about 10 yards past the gateway to the house and look to your left. You will see the village maypole a considerable distance away. It gives the best indication of how large the hill fort is. Turn your back on the ditch and note how steeply the land drops away northwards to the beck known as Rake Beck. From now on, the perimeter of the hill fort does not have a ditch to protect it. It is probable that there was one at one time, but all traces have long since disappeared. The tour continues along the edge of the escarpment on a public footpath. After the second stile, the path splits. Keep going on the path which is straight ahead, rather than the one going down the slope. The path narrows and climbs steeply. At the top, number 6 on the map, where the land flattens out and where there is a patch of land on which nothing grows, stop and switch on the commentary again. Pause the commentary now. Although we cannot be certain where the entrance to the hill fort is, there is a strong case to say that it is where you are now standing. You will see that at this point, the bank becomes lower, disappears altogether for a while, and then starts to form again further west. If you have difficulty in seeing this, look at the line of the fence as it drops down on the left to the level where you are standing, and then ascends on the right. The bank is turned in at either sides of the gap to form revetments. The argument against this being the entrance is that there is no easy path to it, which would make the task of bringing cattle into the fort, for instance, very difficult indeed. It is possible that the small mound inside the hill fort, some 20 yards to your left, is recent, and was possibly created when the cottage was built. It blocks a potential path into the fort from the east. The field surrounding you is also of botanic interest, with orchids and other rare plants growing here. It is a rare example of a limestone escarpment, which has not been subjected to crop cultivation. On the slope opposite the gap is a patch of bare earth. This has been identified recently as a site of lime burning, a fact reinforced by the 1861 census, showing that Bank Cottage was at that time occupied by a lime burner. The lime would have been used in place of the cement that we use today. Start walking further along the path. Pause now and restart the commentary in about 50 yards. On the right, the field slopes to a beck called Rake Hill Beck. Across the beck, the land rises and you can see that there is a sunken lane, or hollow way, as such features are sometimes called. You will see that the lane heads northwards and then westwards towards Scholes. Its depth denotes its long-time use as a route to and from Barrack. Now follow the footpath along to the stile. The earthworks disappear at this point, although they would have continued across the house to the right of the ginnel which you were about to enter. Climb the stile and walk to the far end on the ginnel, stopping before you reach the tarmac drive. This is location 7 on the map. Pause now and continue the commentary at point number 7. The road in front of you is called the Boyle, which may be a corruption of the term Bailey. This location is the other strong candidate for being the entrance to the earthworks, presenting a strong position from which to defend. It would appear that there have been many changes to this area by the inhabitants over the last 2,000 years. For instance, the ditch on the edge of Hall Tower disappears as it approaches where you are standing, and there is every likelihood that the Normans altered the terrain when they constructed the Bailey. Descend from the ginnel and enter the Boyle. Turn left and return to the village centre. As you have probably gathered, there is much that we have yet to discover about this remarkable site and its various layers of historical interest spanning over 2,000 years. We hope, however, that the tour has given you an insight into why and how it came to be. Thank you for listening, and note we would very much appreciate your comments about the audio or any other aspects of this site, which you can leave via the Barrack and Elmet website from where you downloaded this file. This now ends the tour of Barrack Earthworks.